How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Plus, terms and conditions apply.
And a good rainy Wednesday to you, and welcome into Darren, Donnick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It looks like it's going to be just one of those rainy gray days. But we'll try to pick you up here for the next 4 hours on the program. Pete Weber set to join us and go down memory lane with him in the next 15 minutes. Darren McFarlane, that's me, down here on the south side of town in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donnick over in East Nashville. Chase McCabe in Bellevue, holding fort in West Nashville, and Marquise Munson back at 1824 Murfreesboro Pike. That is, of course, our Wholesale Inc. Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Gentlemen, how you doing?
Hanging in there, Darren. Another day. It feels like New England out there today. A little breezy, cool,
yeah.
A little mist out there. But we attack this day just like we attack every other day.
We went from 80s to now rainy and cold, right?
Yep.
I'm doing fantastic.
Oh, yeah? Why is that?
I got a lot of sleep last night. That's
why. Well, good. There you go.
Slept like poo the night before, made up for it last night. So I'm feeling good.
Slept like poo the night before.
Yeah. I don't know about you guys. I've been meaning to bring this up, but through all of this, my sleep has been weird, and I've talked to other people that have said the same thing. Either they're having crazy dreams and vivid dreams and tossing and turning. I mean, I guess our stress levels are higher with all of this, but it's been very up and down through this whole thing. Some nights are good, some nights aren't.
Okay.
I would agree with that. That's been my experience for sure. I have not been sleeping great.
I would agree with that, but I don't know what's changed for me.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like it goes in cycles with me. You know, I'm up and down all the time anyway. So I don't know if it's really just being quarantined or that's just kind of business as usual for me. 22 years ago today, I was at the Box Seat in Green Hills. Yes, that was a very popular place at one point in this town.
Which is now Crow's Nest?
I don't know. I know it was at one point. Is it still?
Yeah,
I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's still there.
Okay, because I haven't been to Green Hills in a while.
Bandywood?
Yes.
Yes.
Bandywood Drive in the Green
That's
Hills
right.
area.
Oh, you should check it out. It's a good place. I was over at the Box Seat in Green Hills on May 6th, 1998, living in this town, and I watched a gem of an afternoon baseball game. What a concept. Yes. Major League Baseball was playing then. There was a day game, and it was the Cubs and the Astros. And I watched, and I got mesmerized by Kerry Wood throwing a one-hit, 20-strikeout shutout over then the Houston Astros, who clearly were doing things on the up-and-up. They were not cheating on that day. They were not stealing
signs.
Well,
they were in the National League then.
They could not figure out Kerry Wood. And do we remember who got the lone hit off of him?
Oh, good question.
I have no idea.
I can tell you, though, that even if they had had the signs, they might have had trouble hitting Kerry
that day. It was pretty filthy stuff. Pretty
he was a phenomenon for that half of the season.
He was 20 years old.
He faded a little bit. He wore out a little bit towards the end of the year. It's just too bad that his arm didn't hold up, because when he was on that run, he was Dwight Gooden-like. He hit a run there. Remember Dontrell Willis had kind of a similar run?
Sure.
You know,
until he couldn't throw
Mark
strikes
Fidrich.
Anymore. Mark
Fidrich. So there's certain pitchers that fit a category of, you know, for a short period of time, they were as great as anybody. You know, just dominating for months at a time, but it just couldn't be sustained over years at a time. But, man, he was something. Some of the pitches he threw in that game were just ridiculous.
Ridiculous. I mean, they weren't even close. The Astros were not even close to touching him. He plunked Biggio, I think, in the fifth or sixth inning, and he had already lost. He had already given up the hit by then, but I was going to say, even if he didn't give up the hit, he would have lost the perfect game, but he gave up the hit early in the game. Anybody remember who it was?
I can only guess.
RG.
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 Because the 98 Astros, I think, were a – they might have been a playoff team, right? They were pretty good. The Killer Bees, Biggio, Bagwell.
Oh, yeah.
Derek Bell.
Mm-hmm.
So you said it was RG?
Mm-hmm.
I think RG, Ron Gant, but he wasn't on
he
the Astros.
He hit it off – it went off the third baseman's glove, who was, I think, Kevin Ory, I believe, was the third baseman. Then and everybody was
Kevin
screaming.
Kevin Ory.
Yeah,
wow.
give him an error, but they didn't. They counted it as a hit. Ricky Gutierrez,
the shortstop. Nice. Yep.
I never
would
have
the lone hit. But that was an unbelievable performance. If you were watching, there's no way you were leaving. No way you were turning away. It was that cool. But yeah, that was 22 years ago today.
I think our show at the time was at the Sara Lee Classic back in the day, the LPGA event out at Hermitage when that was going on.
The Predators were getting ready for their inaugural season.
Yeah. How about that?
And that was my first I had been there 5 months. 5+ months, almost 6 months whenever that took place. But yeah, the Predators were getting ready to start their inaugural season. And I was told, you know, Green Hills, you could actually navigate a lot easier. You could actually go get in and out of Green Hills way easier than today. People used to go to Green Hills a lot more. And so
pitching for the Astros?
Who?
Who was pitching for the Astros that day?
I don't remember, which tells you how dominant Kerry Wood is, right? It's the nobody even remembers who he was going up against. I don't know. I don't remember.
I'll look it up.
Okay.
I'm curious myself.
Because I totally forgot that Randy Johnson played for the Astros that year.
Yeah, they traded for him.
Yeah. Well, it was a 2-0
trade
game.
Deadline, I think. Yep.
I would have remembered if it was Randy Johnson. It wasn't Randy Johnson because I would remember versus Kerry Wood.
Mike Hampton was there.
Yeah, they didn't have Randy Johnson yet. I think they picked him up at the deadline.
Well, because after you told who it was, I was looking up that roster, and I was like, Randy Johnson.
Well, was it Moises Alou on that Astros team?
Yeah, it's a good team.
Ironically.
It's a very good team.
Ironically, him playing there in Wrigley Field for the Astros.
Shane Reynolds is the losing pitcher.
Shane
Pretty good pitcher
Reynolds.
At one time.
Yeah, he was. He was. He was.
He actually pitched a full game. He pitched a very good game. He struck out 10.
Yeah.
On most days, he gave a one earned run and struck out 10. Total. Huh.
Once again, that just reiterates what I said. That just tells you how spectacular. That's a really good day. They lost 2-0. He pitched great. 10 strikeouts. Like you said, nobody remembers his pitching performance. I mean,
Shane Reynolds went 19-8.
Yeah. Yeah. He was a good pitcher. There were some of those strikeouts. And here's the thing. I felt like he was getting stronger as the game went along. Some of those strikeouts in the eighth and ninth inning, I don't know if the Astros had just said, the heck with it. We're not going to be able to touch this guy today. Let's just get this. By the way, it was over quick. I think it was barely over 2 hours, that game. It was a very fast game. I think if you see some of those strikeouts late in the game, man, they weren't even close to touching that ball. Like I said, I think maybe the Astros had pulled the ripcord at that point and said, the heck with this. Let's get out of here. I've had enough.
We don't have a chance anyway.
We're not. We need 18 innings to maybe get a couple hits off this guy. Yeah. Hard to believe, though. 22
years. The Astros that
ago.
Year, both of those teams made the playoffs. Randy Johnson got picked up by the Astros at the deadline, went 10-1 with a 1.28 ERA in 11 starts, and then went free agent after that and signed with the Diamondbacks.
Okay. Mm. Yeah, I totally forgot about that. That he got traded from Seattle to Houston and played, you know, that half.
I completely remember that. I just forgot it was that year.
Yeah.
Hard to believe. Was it? Did you say Derek Bell was on? Wasn't Derek Bell? Did you say that, Willie?
Yeah.
Did you bring up Derek
Killer
Bell.
Bees.
Yeah, he was on that team, right?
Derek Bell, Bell, Alou, and Bagwell all had over 100 RBIs. Plus, they had Biggio, who was the leadoff man. He had 20 homers and 88 RBIs. So that was a solid team. Of course, that 98, that's a year where offense was king, right? That was the summer of 98, the McGuire and Sosa craziness. So that was a pretty entertaining year of baseball, even though looking back on it, we kind of roll our eyes a little bit and say, oh, boy, you know, it's kind of bittersweet to think back. But that was a fun summer to follow.
Do we know what Kerry Wood ended up doing that year? What was his overall numbers?
Yeah, he was the rookie of the year.
Yeah.
Wow.
20 years
old. I'll look
up
his numbers.
1998. That was a year that caught the eye of an 11-year-old chaser.
One of my better victories in radio, Chase, was when we used to do a weekly with Nick the Stick Hunter. And there was a time for a good while I kept saying, Kerry Wood needs to go to the bullpen. He needs to be a closer. And Nick would go absolutely bonkers and said, it was the stupidest thing anybody's ever said on radio, on airwaves. It's never going to happen. You're a moron. George, why do you have this guy on the show? Willie, you've got to be embarrassed for this guy. How do you guys do a show with him? And I kept saying, Kerry Wood, I'm just telling you, he needs to be their closer. He needs to stop. It's just he's not a starting pitcher anymore. He needs to go to the bullpen and be a closer. And it would drive Nick crazy. And the day they moved him to the bullpen and he became the closer, oh, that was a glorious day for me.
Did Nick have to miss that week?
I don't remember.
Did he call it and say, hey, guys, can't do it this week?
No, Nick was good. He didn't care. Nick didn't care.
He was pretty ready to go every week.
Yeah.
That was my favorite. That was one of my favorite weeklies you guys did when he would – because he would give it to all of you about something.
He was something. Nick the Stick. Yeah, no, he never
missed.
It was
not dull.
No, he was – dull is something nobody ever said about Nick the Stick.
Kerry Wood, at age 21 in 1998, was the rookie of the year. He went 13-6 in 26 starts, and he struck out 233 in 166 innings. But if you remember, he was hurt by the end of the year. They kind of pushed him through. He did pitch in the postseason, lost his start to the Braves. The Braves took care of him pretty easily, although he did pitch well in his start against the Braves. He only lasted 5 innings, but he only gave up 1 run. But then he had Tommy John right after that, missed the entire next year, and really was never the same for the most part. He had a couple of good years. He actually led the league in strikeouts the year that the Cubs had that nightmare ending, the Steve Bartman game against the Marlins. You know, in 2003, he went 14-11 that year, and after that, he kind of dropped off after that, and eventually, as you said, a couple years after that, he had a couple good years as a closer. He had 34 saves in 2008. But you kind of wonder what might have been, you know, if he had been able to stay healthy a little bit better.
Speaking of that year, Ryan sent me this list of the top 10 best non-champions in baseball, and I got very depressed when I read this list because at the top, the 98 Braves, the 93 Braves, then number 4 was the 97 Braves, and it just brought back those memories based on something you were saying. But, yeah, now I'm depressed again. I just did that to myself. But
you walked into it, your own depression.
I did. But
we'll come back.
By the way, how did you guys how were your KBO teams last night?
Mine won. Bounced back and won.
Yeah, my guys are 2-0.
I need to look.
Doosan came back.
The Lotte Giants. Doosan's 1-1. They even their record. And what's your team again, Chase?
Yeah, we're 0-2. 0-2. They lost 4-3. Hey, slow out of the game.
Samsung struggling.
Right. Yep. Need them to be quality like they're.
You know who hit a dinger last night? Somebody hit a dinger last night for the opponent of Samsung. The Dinos.
Yeah.
And I got to look it up here. I saw the highlight of it. Who was it?
Mike Wright was pitching.
Oh, Aaron Altair, former Met, former Philly, hit a bomb against your boys.
Hey, there's a few names you might know. Ben Lively was pitching.
Or not. I don't remember Aaron Altair.
For some reason, I remember Ben
Lively. You don't remember Aaron Altherr?
No, I don't. You said he played for the Mets. Maybe that's why.
Are you surprised that Willie knows that? I'm not.
Mets last year. Phillies.
Did he actually play for them?
Yeah.
Okay. Clearly, that guy wasn't on my fantasy team.
No, he would not have been in our fantasy league. He was in the National League only fantasy league. He might have been a pickup. He might have been a guy on the street you could pick up.
Wow. If he might have been picked up in an NL only league, that kind of tells you why I didn't know who he was.
No, let's be honest. He's a scrub. Okay. That's why he's over there.
Sounds good. All right, we will come back. The voice of the Predators on radio, Pete Weber. We will go down memory lane with Pete next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase on this Wednesday morning. Hope everybody's having a good day. ESPN 102.5 The Game. We say hello to Pete Weber, the fine voice, the longtime voice of the Nashville Predators for the last 22 years over on the radio side, the radio network with us on 102.5 The Game. Pete, how you doing?
I'm doing well, guys. How about yourselves?
Well, doing same thing we've been doing for almost the last 2 months.
I miss you, Pete.
Yeah.
How about you and Claudia? What have you guys been doing? Going ape?
Well, Claudia still, yeah, we go ape, but Claudia still goes to work 3 days a week at Catholic Charities.
Okay.
And so that helps her with her sanity, and not to mention helps the community out as she goes to work to help everybody. And it all began, really, it was, if you will, in quotation marks, only the aftermath of the tornadoes in early March, and then, of course, COVID-19.
You know, it was interesting. We started off the show talking about 22 years ago today was the Kerry Wood performance against the Astros, and I remember being at the box seat in Green Hills, and I said, you know, that was also the lead-up to the inaugural season for the Predators. Well, ironically, it was 2 days before that Kerry Wood pitching performance that the NHL awarded the Predators their franchise and announced that they would be indeed the 27th team in the league. What do you remember about that 1998 season getting ready for that first every year?
Well, number one, I didn't know for sure I was going to be here until some point around mid-August of 1998. Indeed, I was working for Empire Sports Network covering the NHL draft and the expansion draft, which stocked the Predators at the building in Buffalo in 1998. I remember walking into the building that day with Claudia, and she nudged me in the ribs. I think broke two of them with that nudge and said, look over there. There's Bobby Orr. And I go, yes, he's an agent now, so that's okay. So finding out in August, and then the accelerated get after it and be ready. And then I got here in time for the first day of the first training camp, which was September 12th of 98. 1 week from that day, we were down at the Von Braun Center in Huntsville, Alabama, and the Predators were playing their first preseason game against the Florida Panthers. And I had a real good glimpse of what that season would be like, with Patrick Cote having three bouts that night with Peter Worrell of the Florida Panthers.
Gosh, I didn't realize you were not here till late. I mean, I knew the Crispy story. In fact, Terry told it to us a couple of weeks ago. I didn't realize you didn't get here till later than that. Huh.
Oh, yeah, the same thing happened with Dan Dupa of the Vegas Golden Knights. His timing was maybe even a little bit later than mine. So when you're putting a new team together, your broadcasters are not the top priorities. You're trying to find guys who could play the game.
I learned something new today. Pretty cool. Todd had a chance to talk with Jordan Tutu last night on game night.
Mm-hmm.
That was a lot of fun on Facebook Live and just kind of going down memory lane with him. I also learned something last night that I had not heard. It's pretty interesting that I'm learning stuff that I'd heard all these stories, but yet I'm learning new things. He told me last night that he initially was set to sign with the New York Rangers before Ken Holland picked up the phone and I guess called his agent last minute, said, wait a minute, we've got a better offer. And that's how he ended up in Detroit. I don't think I had ever heard that before, unless I forgot it. I don't remember that he was about to sign with the Rangers before he ended up signing with Detroit because they came in with a better deal. Did you know that? Have you heard that?
Yeah, I had heard that, but I got to tell you, Ken Holland was great for those last-minute offers. If you take a look at some of the things that have been on NHL Network lately, he did the very same thing to prevent Brett Hull from joining the Montreal Canadiens and instead come on with that star-studded, I think, 8 or 9 Hall of Famers on the 2002 Red Wings.
You know, I talked to him about that first-ever playoff because what that meant, you know, to this city, that 03-04 season and that first time the puck was dropped against the Red Wings in Game 3 and what that atmosphere was like and what it meant early on as the Predators, you know, what it meant to this franchise, because as a new franchise, they didn't have the luxury like Vegas had, or they didn't have the luxury that probably Seattle is going to have of, you know, building yourself a powerhouse where you can just jump right in there and be contenders right away. It took time, and what it was like to finally get to that point. And, of course, their first 4 playoff appearances, you know, they just couldn't get past Detroit and San Jose in that first round. So it was kind of the slow build, which is not what we're accustomed to today. Everybody wants the fast build. But what were those times like for the franchise and trying to break through? But what it meant, those early playoff series, to the fan base?
Well, you remember what it was like. It took 3 or 4 years for the team to finally even be able to score 200 goals in a season.
Yeah.
So it was just trying to build up the offensive depth or give a chance to youngsters who could help develop that for you. So it was more than a little bit frustrating, but you understood. There was not the mindset of the fast build at that point in time. The quickest build we can really remember would have been the Florida Panthers in their 3rd season going to the Stanley Cup Final. Though they got swept by the Colorado Avalanche, including a triple overtime final. But for the most part, let's think about the Philadelphia Flyers. Terry Crisp, Philadelphia Flyers. He goes there in the 72-73 season, and then the next year they win a Stanley Cup in the 7th year. The New York Islanders started in 72-73, won a cup in 1980. That was the sort of build time that was required. Let's face it, the Kings never got to a Stanley Cup final until 1993, and they started in 1967-68. So slow builds had been the whole theme of putting together an NHL franchise and getting it going.
And then finally the breakthrough, right? The Anaheim Ducks, they get it done in that 2010 season, 2010-2011 season, and they break through and push through to the second round. What, you know, for all the fans that have been there from the beginning and waited for that moment, what was that like?
Well, that was one of the few times I had prepared something to say at the end of the series. Because I really don't like that, but I felt that it was sort of like the Rocky story. So when they knocked off the Ducks, I just called out, "Yo, Adrian, they did it." And it was like one of those, and here's the thing that made it so fitting. The guys involved in the overtime victory and the overtime winner, how about that, Jordan Tutu and Jared Spiffy?
Yeah.
It wasn't any of the so-called offensive stars of the team at that time, but what Barry Trotz would refer to as the hod carriers, the guys who did the work in the trenches, who were able to come up with a bit of the glory.
And then we had Joe Ward on last week after he put out on the Players Tribune that he was officially hanging things up, and I know he hasn't been in the league for the last year and a half, but just kind of going down memory lane with him. What a good guy. What a fun guy to be around. And, you know, was no surprise to see all of his former teammates and people who covered him come out and say all the nice things that they did about Joe Ward.
Well, he deserved them. He deserved them big time. I was on a podcast in San Jose yesterday reminiscing about Joel and what he did here. And I think that's intriguing in that each of his alma maters, though he didn't spend much time in the Minnesota Wild organization, but each of them, when you talk about Washington, San Jose, Nashville, all came to love and adore the guy. And what we saw he did with the Big Brother program with Malik here in town and watching over him even after he left as a free agent to make sure he got through and included his high school education at Lighthouse Christian School. I think that was a fantastic tribute, not just to Malik, but also to Joel Ward. And Joel, I think, can carry his head high for what he accomplished. When you consider it was almost an accident that he became a Predator. Predators pro scouts were taking a look at another player, Ryan Jones, who was playing in the Minnesota Wild farm system, and all of a sudden, what Joel Ward accomplished on the ice raised the Predator scouts' eyebrows big time.
Wow, Ryan Jones. I hadn't heard that name in a long time.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
And they did get Ryan Jones.
I was going to say, they ended up getting Ryan Jones, yeah.
They got Ryan Jones, but coincident with all of that, they also signed Joel Ward. It's kind of like, if you want me to get Scotty Bowman going sometime, talk about what all the scouts were doing going up to Parry Sound, Ontario, looking at two other players before this skinny little defenseman named Orr caught their eye.
Well, we know how that turned out, for sure. We're talking to Pete Weber.
Coming up is the anniversary, May 10th, of Bobby Orr goes flying through the air.
Yeah, we're getting right there, aren't we? Well, somebody's going to be calling Crispy to get his story, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, Pete, I want to hit you up on a couple of moments in time that we've been bringing up. So let's go back before, or maybe as the Predators and this next wave of expansion in the league was being talked about. We're talking about 96, 97, where Nashville is given the first team, but it's a group of four teams coming in: Columbus, Nashville, Minnesota, and Atlanta. You had been through a recent round of that. The league had gone through it with Ottawa and San Jose and Anaheim. So give me, at the time, your thoughts when the league was going to go to four more teams. Did you think they were ready for it? What were your concerns? And when you heard Nashville was going to get a team, what did you think?
Well, number one, I thought that Atlanta had a bad rap put on it when the Flames left. It was simply a case of Alberta money, oil money, was able to buy the Flames and pick them up and move. Much to the chagrin of defenseman of the Flames, Brad Marsh, who thought he was set for life because he married the owner's daughter, Tom Cousins. And then Columbus was always written up. And even, now, not that he was the great guy who would cover sports for you, but James Michener wrote a book in the early 70s, Sports in America, and pointed out that Columbus, Ohio, was the potential of a burgeoning major league sports market. So I took him at his word, and I have seen, I think, the backing the Blue Jackets have had since they came into being 2 years after the Predators. And then there was no question that Minnesota got a bad deal as well. When we first saw the media guides in the fall of, 92, that they no longer said North Stars on them, just said the Minnesota Stars, we saw something was up. And, of course, the next year they ended up being moved to Dallas, when the owner at the time, Norm Green, found out he could charge double what he did in Minnesota for tickets in Dallas and still get just as many purchasers. So I thought the four territories were ripe for this. I like the idea that the Predators got started so that what ultimately became the Titans, started out as the Tennessee Oilers, did not have a stronghold on the market by themselves, and I thought that was a very good move.
Another thing we talked about was, in light of The Last Dance with Michael Jordan, we were talking about the limelight and how big a star Michael Jordan was compared to everybody else, and Charles Barkley put him and Tiger Woods above everybody else. But sort of paint the picture, if you will, Pete, because you have ties in L.A. and you know this league so well, how great Gretzky's star was at its height. I mean, we know still today, I mean, if he goes anywhere, especially in the hockey world, we know what the reaction is going to be. But at his height, how close do you think he was to Jordan, Tiger Woods?
Well, let's just take, for example, as soon as he got traded in August of 88, how many U.S. commercials he was a part of. Seven Up was the first one that comes to mind. Doing that, had that was the perfect market for him to go. And had he not gone there, Willie, I'm willing to argue you and I and Darren and Chase would not be here talking about Nashville Predators, because he showed that hockey could work in the Sun Belt. And that is, you know, that's how the Ducks came into being, because they saw that there was room for more in Southern California. Ultimately, how the Guns decided to give up their franchise in Minnesota and go on to San Jose. And Florida comes in along with the Ducks. Tampa Bay had come in beforehand along with the Ottawa Senators. Wayne Gretzky's impact on this league, just by the presence of these franchises, is still being felt, and we all know what his presence is still rather prominent in the NHL record book.
Oh, yeah, no question about it. Pete, here's another historical perspective for you. You got me thinking with your reference to James Minchner, because I was reading an article about Don Shula where apparently one time the owner brought James Minchner into the locker room as a guest. So James Minchner writes books. He's not a sports reporter. And Don Shula still threw him out. Yeah, he threw him out of the locker room just because he was a writer. But you saw a lot of Don Shula in the battles between the Bills teams that you covered and his Dolphins teams. Give us your perspective on Don Shula.
He was always open to members of the media asking him questions. I always look forward to the Wednesdays during the Dolphin weeks, because we would have great conference calls with Don Shula. Very enjoyable. And here was a guy who then changed with the times. Obviously, he had to. Now, here's the best Don Shula mention I've seen in a long time. The other day, just within hours after we learned of his death, someone wrote, "Here's a man who just passed away who coached against George Halas and Bill Belichick." I mean, think about that.
Wow.
Now, that's a tribute in many ways to the longevity of George Halas. But still, he coached against the two of them. Tie those together. I mean, that's like when you put Stan Musial together with Ty Cobb and Pete Rose. The bridge is there that existed statistically. But Shula loved the game, and he wanted it to succeed. And so if you remember those Dolphins Super Bowl teams, they were a hard-running group. Bob Greasy might throw as few as seven passes in a game, but with Zonka and with Kick, they were moving the ball largely on the ground. And then all of a sudden, 1983, that draft, he gets a kid named Marino, and all of a sudden he pairs him up with Duper and Clayton, and he's moving the ball through the air, and in large chunks through the air. So he adapted to what became of the game and played a large role in when they liberalized the rules on blocking, number one, and then on contact with receivers, number two. He was able to be at the forefront of all of that.
It's still one of the craziest stats I think I've ever seen. When I was a kid, I remember looking. I wasn't old enough to watch those great Dolphins teams of the early 70s, but I remember looking at the football register and looking in the Super Bowl stats and seeing that Bob Greasy in the second Super Bowl, not the one that they went undefeated, but the year after, they beat the Vikings, and he was 6-for-7 passing. He threw seven passes in the Super Bowl, and they won easy.
Easily, yes, sir. Absolutely. And I spent many conversations with Bob Greasy later on in his broadcasting career talking about that. But he would always first shake his head when I approached him. He goes, "I'm not going to talk about the Notre Dame-Purdue game, okay?"
Pete Weber is with us, the voice of the Nashville Predators, and enjoying some of the stories that you're telling about the early days of the Predators. I remember that playoff series against Anaheim where they finally broke through and your call. But was there a moment – maybe in the first two, three seasons that you're sitting there in the broadcast booth next to Crispy and you just have that moment of this might actually work, that this is going to work here in Nashville, that the fans are buying in?
Actually, you know, in many ways, it even goes to the first game. How about the team had not played a game yet in the building at 501 Broadway? All the preseason games were on the road purposely. And then before the first faceoff, and as the first faceoff in Predators history is unveiling, there's a standing ovation. I mean, that gave me an inkling of what was to happen. And then that Easter Sunday afternoon in 2004, the first home playoff game, and here we are in the Bible Belt, and they said nobody's going to show up on Easter Sunday for a hockey game in Nashville, Tennessee. Well, that still might have been one of the loudest times I can ever recall in that building.
Yeah, that was a fun one, and we got to air that game recently through all of this, and it was I actually was the one that edited it and put it all together, and it was neat going down memory lane listening to that. So you're the perfect
person.
You got
all of my curses out of there. I did.
Yeah, we got everything out of there. I wasn't really worried about you. I was worried about Crispy, but we got it. We got it all out of there. You're the perfect person to ask this question to. Ryan Porth and I had this discussion on our show, The Rundown, actually on Preds Insiders yesterday, you know, with The Last Dance being out. And so everybody's kind of in that documentary mode. If you were to make a 30 for 30 type documentary on something involving the Nashville Predators, what would be the first thing that you would want to see made?
Yeah. I think one aspect of it should at least be the telephone call in the summer of 2005 that David Poile received from Don Baisley, the agent for Paul Kariya, that he wanted to sign here. That was sort of the inverse of your typical recruiting free agent pitches to get that and then start out with David as he was building the franchise, because I think that was what began to put the team at the top. When you have a player of that caliber looking to come and play for you rather than you know, jetting around the country and pursuing him and or his agent, I think that would be a huge part of it.
Yeah, that would be interesting, because that's one of the moments we always point to that changed everything. Because if Paul Kariya doesn't sign here, and maybe if he doesn't sign here in the manner in which he did, you know, who knows what this looks like. But to me, that was that was when I really started to pay attention more. I mean, I remember Tutu's debut and that being such a big deal, and kind of keeping up with things, the first playoff, you know, run and first playoff appearance. But, you know, I as a novice hockey fan knew who Paul Kariya was. And when he signed here, that was what got people's attention. So I think that would be a good one. One that I suggested too was just the first game, you know, just leading up to the first game in 1998 and everything, all the stories involved with that, I think would be cool.
It was a fantastic time. I'd always wanted to be in on the birth of a franchise. And, as it turned out, I looked into a pretty good one.
Yes, you did. We could also do one on Crispy and soccer kicks.
Well, that one probably would have to be on a special pay channel so as to make sure we can filter out some aspects of his response.
HBO.
To seeing such things. Yep.
Pete, leave us with this, and I know you don't have the answer, but I just want to get your thoughts. What's your opinion? Where do you think we thought we were going to learn something from the kind of the Board of Governors meeting, but really no news came out. So where do you think this is truly headed? Because baseball, the NBA, and the NHL has been a little bit quiet here of late. What do you think's going on behind the scenes, in your opinion?
Yeah, and for that matter, today – MLS teams were allowed to reopen their facilities. And what is it, Friday still for the NBA? Is that what they're going
Yes.
after?
Yes, yep.
I really think this is the holding pattern still, and waiting to see essentially what the CDC has to say, because we're reliant upon their advice and their guidance, and then how local governments respond to that. Because I've not, you know, I can't imagine that we are going to be flying to New York or any place like that anytime soon. And then, isn't it eerie to watch the Korean baseball on ESPN in the middle of the night and to see the games with no one in the stands, and knowing that Carl Ravitch, working those games, realizes that he's almost like a reporter on the 18th green at Augusta National. You're almost whispering to call all the action. But I think we just have to be patient, and it's not easy to be right now, to stand by, wait, and see when we do. And I'm going to say when, not if. We are going to get a go-ahead at some point in time. But what will that be like? And do any of your listeners have any recommendations for books on the 1918-1919 pandemic that hit this country? Because I would really like to get into that. And that was the last time, really, without a labor dispute, that the Stanley Cup was not awarded.
Somebody sent me a picture this morning. People in attendance of baseball games in those times were wearing masks, ironically.
Yeah, and I got one on Twitter, too, from a football stadium in Georgia from 1919.
But now, they weren't practicing social distancing, but they were wearing masks.
No, they were right next to each other.
They were right next to each other.
If I could zoom it out, if I could see someone trying to smoke a cigar through the mask, but I didn't.
Pete, continue to go ape. Thanks for joining us. Always good to talk to you, and hopefully we'll see you soon.
Guys, thank you very much, and I know it's difficult, and some of you have pets around the house, and you have to pay attention to them. If not, certain tragedy can result. And if anybody in East Nashville can drop off a supply of plastic cups at the Donick household, I think that would be recommended.
There you go.
We lost another one yesterday, Pete. We lost another glass yesterday.
No. Yep. How many? What's the count?
Another casualty. Overall, the last year or so, he's got six or seven, at least, big glass cups, glasses, tumble, you know, whatever we like to use, ice water glasses and stuff.
Yeah.
The mason jars, they're gone. They're gone. So Evans Donick upstairs left the glass out on the dresser, and sure enough, Stanley got to it, knocked it over, boom, gone.
Well, it's not Stanley's
Stanley.
He almost got two yesterday. He had a wine glass in his sights. I had to pop up from the couch. I was really comfortable on the couch, just relaxing, and I had to pop up with a reflex and sprint over before he knocked that bad boy over.
Wow.
Willie, I'm going right now on Amazon ordering a group of plastic cups for the Donick household.
Thank you, Pete. Have
no
a great day.
Dog, do you? Okay, be good, guys.
All right, Pete Weber. Stanley is a troublemaker. No doubt about it. All right, there is big news coming from East Tennessee. We'll tell you about it. To finish up hour number one, that'll be a perfect lead-in to Joe Rexroad to kick off hour number two. That's coming up next on Darren, Donick, and Chase. ESPN 102.5, The Game. Let's get the breaking news sounder ready, and it's not to tell you that the Samsung Lions are 0-2. It's not to tell you that my Doosan Bears finally notched a win. It's not to tell you that Willie's Lodi Giants, is that how you say it, Lodi?
I don't know. I don't know how you say that.
Yeah, we haven't figured that out.
L-O-T-T-E. Is it, I mean, could it be, I think it's Lotte, but I don't know.
Lotte? I'm not sure. It's not to tell you that, your Giants are 2-0, is that right?
They're 2-0.
Yeah. It's not to tell you that Marquise, his Kia Tigers just gave away a car at their last game. It's not to tell you that. But let's go on and hit the breaking news sounder. It is very clear that there is a trend that is happening right now as we sit here on May 6th. And just a few minutes ago, the new chancellor at the University of Tennessee, Chancellor Plowman, has announced that the University of Tennessee plans to bring students back to campus this fall. The health and safety of our students and employees are our first priority. We will continue to rely on health professionals and data to guide us through these decisions, but University of Tennessee plans to have classes on campus in the fall. That now makes 10 of 14 schools in the SEC that have announced that they are indeed bringing the students back. What does that mean for the trend? We all know what that means for the trend. Trend is there's going to be a college football season this fall. That's what I believe.
That seems that way.
But can we say that for sure? I mean, I like we've been saying all along.
When you
go out and say, you know, we're going to have students back. Can you really say that with certainty? I think you can hope, you can want to, you can have that be your goal. But these next few months, we're gonna find some things out.
Well, it says their plan. Right?
Yeah.
It didn't say it's set in stone, but their plan is to have students back on campus. And, of course, why would you be making that announcement on May 6th? Or some have already made that announcement. I told you about Arkansas's AD who put it out there on Monday to a I think it was to a group on Zoom. So, I mean, look, this is the trend. The plan is to have people back on campus in the fall, and the plan is for them to play college football in the fall. That's what I believe. And I know this is what I know is on Mondays. And
but
it's not college.
Here's the question. I don't know that the motivation is directly tied to, well, this means we can have college football. I think it's probably part of it.
Probably not.
But it's
probably just.
But as you pointed out, Darren, there's all kinds of people saying, well, you know, if we're not, you know, we're not getting the same value for our dollars from these online classes. So if we're going to have online classes, then what's the break on tuition? What's the break on this and that? And so I think it's probably a lot easier for the colleges to say, well, we'll just have college. We'll just have the students on campus. But it's so complicated. I hope this is right. I hope this is the right call. I hope this goes smoothly. But man, my daughter's a junior, right? So I'm thankful that this is not a situation that affects her. But if you have a senior going on to college next year, How comfortable do you feel sending he or she out into the world for the first time at a college campus where this is going on?
Well, do you
that's a very good point. You
plan on staying in for the rest of 2020?
That's the other point, right? I mean, I go back and forth on it. At some point, we have to battle it, right? At some point, we're going to have to battle the virus smartly and take all the measures that we have to take, and we have to determine who's at risk. But that's where, when I watch the Korean Baseball League, that's what dawns on you, is that they're way ahead of where we are in handling this thing, right? Our case numbers are still going up, and I don't know that we've hit the peak, even though we want to, right? Because we've hit our limit, I think, mentally as a society. We can't stay inside and duck for cover much longer. We got to get out there a little
bit.
Well,
it's
not
about
staying
inside,
so smartly.
It's not about, we can all stay inside. It's not about that. It's about what's happening when we stay inside. Okay? We can't have the whole country fall apart.
Of course.
Because we'll all be staying inside. Because none of us will have anything to go to.
Yeah.
If we stay inside all of 2020.
Yeah, yeah.
And quite honestly, these universities are feeling the heat, man. I'm telling you. I've been bringing this up for weeks. That there are people out there telling universities, I'm not paying full admission. If you're going online, I'm bagging the fall, or I want a cheaper rate, or I'm going to sue you because I'm not paying full price for that. Those stories are already out there. There's two gigantic things in play. If you have really, really lousy attendance in the fall for universities across this country and you don't have college football, I don't think any of us want to see what the fallout is from that. It won't be pretty.
It won't be pretty at all. It still doesn't change the question.
They're having this conversation today.
But you also have to have the question in your home. If you're sending a child off to college this fall, how do you feel about it? Go to the dorm. Go have at it.
I think you
want to
have
some anxiety about that.
I think you do, but here's what I battle all the time, and you tell me where you guys are with. We're all going to – look, it is already opening back up. So what is the cutoff? What's okay? What's not okay? It's okay to do this. Is it not okay to do – where are you drawing the line in the sand? I mean, if you do one thing, how do you not say it's not safe to do the other thing? You see what I mean? I mean,
But the virus is going to spread. The more activity, the more people get together, the virus will spread. That is a fact.
Well, we're already out. I mean, I've already told you the scene down here where I am. I mean, if I want to go eat today at a restaurant, I can walk right in and sit down and eat.
Yep, and
the
virus could be there, and if the more people that do that, the more chance the virus will be there.
I haven't done
that to others.
But you know, I mean, when I look, I hear I don't want you to think, and anybody out there listening, because Willie knows, I think the two on the show know this because we've been talking about it for almost 2 months. I don't feel like I have to tell them, but for people maybe just tuning in, we're not on differing sides. We're all saying the same thing, but we're presenting different avenues. We all are in agreements with we need to do things the right way, safety first. It's got to be, look, if I go out, I haven't chosen to sit down in a restaurant yet, but I do go out with a mask, and I'm trying to do things the right way. The point is, Willie, desperate times, people, when it gets desperate, people change how they feel about things. By the way, it's happening right down to you are closer than us to it. You live in East Nashville. Have you been reading some of the stuff that people downtown who are owners, what they're starting to say? You think they're starting to get a little antsy? You think they're starting to get a little bit angry? It's coming. They're saying, okay, enough is enough. It's time for us to open back up our businesses. All around us, people are opening up their businesses. We need to open up ours. It's already happening. And I believe the downtown is coming soon. It's going to open up, and it's going to be with rules. But I think because of the stuff I've been reading, and I can just sense the vibe that's coming from a lot of these very powerful owners of bars and restaurants that have generated a lot of money for them and this city. It's part of the whole right scene that we set for downtown and why it's been so vibrant over the years. They're saying it is time for us to open back up our doors. And I'll be very curious to see how the mayor handles this moving forward, because you can tell the heat. Yes, the heat is starting to get turned up. And I'll be curious to see how John Cooper handles that.
Well,
because they're not just sitting there quietly anymore. There's a lot of them standing up and saying, okay, enough is enough, all right? All around us, you know, these places are opening up. It's time for let us open up. There'll be rules, of course, but this is what happens. And these schools, Willie, are in no different place. They're in the same boat. These universities are starting to get nervous because they've already lost a lot of money, millions already. And if you don't have a college football season and the fall enrollment goes way down, there's going to be a lot of schools in big trouble. And that's why you're starting to see some of this stuff, in my opinion.
And this is my opinion, but I think some other things that you're starting to see, whether it's right or whether it's wrong, based on what you said, we all are in the same agreement, but you're seeing some cities, some states, some whatever organizations that it almost feels like they're having the thought process of, okay, well, let's open back up and just kind of see what happens. And if we have to adjust, we'll adjust. Now, again, I don't know if that's the right way of doing it, but that's what it feels like. And who knows what that means? We could be back in this mess in a couple of months because of that. But it does feel like there is a little bit of trial and error, maybe.
To your point, I agree. I think people are at the point where they're like, look, we're willing to see what happens, but we need to reopen and we need to get going, and then let's see what happens. And if we need to readjust, then we readjust. I think that's a fair point.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's the right way, the wrong way, or somewhere in the middle.
Nobody does. But that's what they're probably saying. Nobody knows, so why don't we just try and see what happens? That's probably their thinking.
That's why I emphasize that it's not an if. We're going to open up eventually. Here, if it's not this week, next week, down the road, it's going to happen pretty soon because, as you said, Darren, all these factors. So that is one thing that we have to all agree on. We have got to be super thoughtful when we go out, when we're in business. If you do go to a restaurant, be that guy that is overly concerned of the mask and the protection and staying 6 feet away, all of those things. If we get lax about it, the virus will spread. And we will have to pull back. So we have to make great choices, not just good choices, if we're gonna move forward in the direction we all want to head.
You know what I put on Facebook this morning? It's just kind of fun in all this. It's not fun, but we need to stay a little lighthearted so we all don't get depressed. I said, remember when we all used to eat cake after someone had just blown on it? Those were the days.
Yeah.
Right? That's like, because you know, because we've talked about this, we're going to rethink things we've done in the past, right, moving
forward.
Oh,
yeah.
No matter what happens.
I tweeted out the Don Zimmer argument with the umpire. Did you guys see that one?
Yes.
I mean, they used to just spit back and forth tobacco juice and chewing gum and sunflower seeds. I mean, inches from each other, just nose to nose. I mean, that can't happen anymore.
Yeah. I just saw where Keith Law went on 92.3 The Fan and said that Francisco Lindor is going to go to free agency and won't even entertain offers from the Indians. Yikes. Not good.
Trade.
All right. We will come back. Yeah, that's what's probably going to happen. We'll go to Joe Rexroad from The Athletic to start hour number two. That's next.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.